Welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast. I'm Greg Schenkel, President of Unique Training and Development and Frontline Leadership Systems. And of course, our mission here at the AOP podcast is really to provide you with some tools and techniques for accelerating some of the projects and initiatives that you're launching to help you with your own personal career development and, of course, get more done with less stress. I'm excited about today's guest. It's Chris Taylor, who is the founder and president of Actionable.co. So let me talk to you about Chris. Chris is passionate about helping leadership and change consultants move beyond edutainment and truly demonstrate the impact of their work. He believes that great consultants don't just deliver content, they drive real, measurable change. And that's where Actionable comes in. Chris and his team provide consultants with the technology, training, and community they need to prove the value of their programs and deepen client relationships. They've already helped over 400 consulting firms achieve this, enabling them to differentiate themselves from competitors and break free from the time for dollars trap. With a focus on founder-led firms, Chris works with small cohorts to help them transform their value proposition and build truly impactful businesses. And you can always check out Chris at his website, www.actionable.co. Welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Greg, thank you so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this.
So, Chris, I know our audience is just going to be curious about how you came to start Actionable.co. And from talking to you before, I know that you probably didn't intend initially to be in the business of helping consultants get better results through their clients.
Yeah, well, no, I wanted to be a film producer, Greg. When I was from about the age of six through to 22, that was my drive. I wanted to be in the business of filmmaking. I've always been passionate about storytelling. I've always been passionate about creation, groups of humans coming together and creating something that didn't exist before. So I went to film school, but I always had that business interest. I was involved in entrepreneurial activities from a very young age as well. And so when I graduated film school, I had an opportunity to run a franchise for a business in British Columbia. And I started sales and sales training as part of that franchise. And I was working with kids, really 18 to 22 year olds that I was teaching how to sell. And so I fell in love with facilitation and training. It was self-serving at the time because it was around my business, but I just really loved the nature of developing skills and interest for things that people coming into the training room may not have actually thought they were interested in. Yeah. So I did that for a bit, and that business went really well and then went really poorly. And that was when I was trying to figure out how to change some of these behaviors that I'd developed. So the story sort of dovetail. But it was around then that I started writing business book summaries. So Actionable Books, which is still alive and well at actionablebooks.com, was my outlet where I was reading business books, trying to take one idea from each book and put it into practice in my own life. So it wasn't just about the consumption of information, it was around the application of information. And that's hence my sort of interest in behavior change.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that you actually did actionable book summaries. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. So all those book summaries turned into requests for training, interestingly. When you write about other people's ideas, leaders and organizations started coming to me saying, the book summaries are great, but could you come talk to our team and would you modify it? And so I sort of fell into running a training company myself. We grew, it was never huge, but sort of mid six figures, a couple staff. And I enjoyed that work, but that's where I then started into the technology to support training, following the training. And it's also when I started to come across some truly exceptional facilitators and trainers and consultants. They were sort of gravitating to Actionable Books. They really liked what I was doing with the technology. And I realized at that point, Greg, and this is probably around 2014, so about 10 years ago at time of recording, that I was good at training. These people were exceptional at training, and they had a lifelong passion for it. And I really wanted to support them. So the business shifted in 2014 to be around supporting consulting and training firms to prove their impact the way that we'd started in our own stuff, but gave us a platform to have greater impact.
So I know, Chris, we've been on a quest for a long time, you know, to get people to apply things from the training program And we used to use a simple paper and pencil exercise called an application journal before we signed on and started to use the actionable platform under our own leader behavior builder process. But what is it that that you believe to be true about habit building as it relates to leadership development?
Sure, absolutely. And I think what I'll do, Greg, if it's all right, I'll speak to sort of the universal truths around behavior change and then how actionable supports that, because we haven't really, with the Habit Builder, created anything new. What we've done is brought more visibility and stability to what people were already trying to do following sessions. So if we think about it, right, a well-delivered facilitated session helps people effectively do two things. One, learn something new about how to change. And then two, help them connect emotionally to that content so that they want to change. Because really, for us as humans to engage in change of any kind, we need both those things to be true, right? We need to know how to change, certainly, but as importantly, we need to have a strong enough reason to break the inertia or the current patterns of behavior in order to engage in change. So facilitators do that really, really well. And then you get to that New Year's Eve moment that I mentioned earlier, where people have great intention. But again, as human beings, we're pretty terrible at actually turning that intention into a lasting behavior change. You know, exhibit A being New Year's Eve commitments, right? New Year's Eve, what are the resolutions? Where actionable kicks in is at that point when people have good intent. So from a practical standpoint, while they're still in the training room, we take that good intent, like I'm going to be a better listener as a leader. It's like, great, that's a good intention. But the problem with it is that you don't do better listening, right? Like if you think about it, when you're in a conversation with someone, you don't, okay, I'm going to better listen now. Like that's not a thing, right? So what we help them do is take that intention and translate it into a daily practice. We use a whole body of good behavior science around this, mostly based on BJ Fogg's work out of Stanford, wrote a great book called Tiny Habits. Michael Bungay Stainier came up with a formula for it called the New Habit Formula. That basically says when instead of I will because. So that intention of I'm going to be a better listener might look like when I'm in a team meeting, instead of waiting for my time to talk, I will ask one follow-up question. Might be an example.
Yeah.
So participants will translate their intention into a daily practice in the room. Then they'll typically have a discussion around how committed they are as a group to making that change happen, to actually practicing this when they leave. And they'll use the Habit Builder or the Leader Behavior platform to capture their commitment to daily practice and to capture their intent, their commitment around how often and how regularly they're going to practice this behavior. So how many days of the week? And what actionable the Habit Builder really is then a nudge platform that's going to remind them of their commitment to behavior change, on the schedule that they chose. So Greg might choose Monday to Friday at 7:45 a.m. I'm going to get a text message that reminds me to actually, you know, ask a question in meetings. On that date and time, Greg will get the ping from the platform, and it just brings it back to top of mind because we're all busy. We've all got 10 million things going on. Even though we had the intention in the room, it's really easy to lose track of that over the course of the week.
Agreed.
The Habit Builder helps keep it top of mind, right? And then it's going to ask the participant to reflect on a scale of 1 to 10. How do I feel I'm doing with that? And why? They can journal about it. It takes, honestly, most people use the platform 3 times a week where they're actually submitting information 2 to 3 times a week. And it takes them 20 seconds to do that. So it's very much meant to meet participants in the flow of work, keep it top of mind. And if they're using components like accountability buddies, or if the facilitator is using power commenting, there's a social support element as well. The whole point to all of this is that we're now developing a visual record of how each individual and in aggregate, the cohort is progressing. What are they working on? How's it going? What's getting in the way? Where are they having wins? And then that informs the conversation with the client.
One of the things that you created in Actionable, and you've certainly let us borrow it, is this model called the impact value chain. And as people hear you explain it, I think the question is, we're trying to solve a bit of Kirkpatrick's five levels of evaluating training effectiveness or learning effectiveness. And what we found, at least, is that the actionable platform probably jumps in to level three, maybe even a little bit of level four in the Kirkpatrick model. Can you explain a little bit about the four circle model, the impact value chain model?
Yeah, that's a good place to start. Picture four circles in a horizontal array. If we think about this, what the impact value chain is doing is providing a fairly simplistic visualization of what training programs are supposed to do in context to strategic priorities. So in the circle on the left, far left, you've got strategic priorities. Now, strategic priorities, and then at the other end, so on the far right, you've got the learning intervention, whatever that happens to look like. These two things are connected, or they should be, but there are a couple links in between. And one of the reasons we've found why it's so hard to quantify the impact, like to get a hard ROI on training programs, is that it's not a one-to-one, right? There's time and steps between those two pieces. So let's start at the left. Achieving strategic priorities typically requires people to act in new ways, right? If we're trying to do something new, chances are we need new process, we need new skills, we need new cultural norms. We're not going to focus on the process side, we're focusing on the people side here. But the box immediate, or the circle rather, immediately to the right of strategic priorities is those things, the new competencies, the skills, or the cultural norms, if you will. So, you know, let's make this real. If one of the strategic priorities is increased customer centricity, which is, you know, we see all the time. But that idea of let's make our customers feel more loved, that's on the strategic side. Then the skills, competencies, cultural norms might include, you know, greater empathy, better communication, leaders who support and recognize those skills. And again, most L&D or OD teams will have defined some of those competencies. Great. But in order to make competencies or skills a reality, we need behaviors to change. And that's the third circle. So from the left, second from the right. So behaviors are that third circle. And then in order to make behavior change happen, we need to know those three things that we were talking about earlier. We need to know how to change. We need to have a strong enough reason to want to change. And we need a path to get there. And that's the learning intervention. So from left to right, strategic priorities, skills and cultural norms, behaviors, learning intervention. The cool part about this is that you can, and I would say should, design from left to right, where strategy is informing the learning interventions. And we measure from right to left, where, you know, who attended all the, you know, sort of standard HR metrics around learning interventions, who attended and what was the feedback scores. But then what behaviors did those learning interventions shift? Can we link those to the competencies that we're trying to develop, and have we previously linked it through? And Greg, as you were talking about the Kirkpatrick model, yeah, actionable in its pure form is squarely in the level three camp, where we are showing the behavior change that's happening. But when we start to get into some of the reporting capabilities, where we're linking these pieces and clustering data based on how organizations want to see it, we can start to tell the level four business impact story. And that's the stuff I'm geeking out on right now. Is how do we make it, you know, really undeniable to the client organization that this learning intervention shifted the behaviors that matter, and we can see a lagging improvement on KPIs that matter to us.
One of the aspects about actionable that we are just beginning to think about, but I know you've used with other consulting partners that you guys support, is this idea of leader-led conversations or actionable conversations. And I think it would be helpful for people to understand how that reinforces the outcomes from the learning and the training.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to. Okay, so if we think about a well-facilitated session, you've got the facilitator in the room helping people understand how to change and helping them find a reason why they want to change. Then the habit builder supports, makes it the path easier and clearer around the change happening. But there is a de facto start and end date to that program. And good facilitators are expensive. And so that training is typically reserved for either infrequent or more senior people inside the organization. And yet the entire organization benefits from continuous learning. So how do we bridge that gap? The sort of industry norms to this are, well, let's put a bunch of stuff on our intranet anyone who's actually launched an LMS knows that most people don't go there. The industry norm is 11% of employees will actually access the LMS. Because, and it's very similar to your action journal, it's extremely well designed, it makes perfect logical sense, and the friction is just a little too high because it's reliant on the individual to proactively go find the thing that matters to them, consume it, figure it out, apply it, and embed it. That's a big ask from a pretty over-stimulated society right now. So what actionable conversations or leader-led conversations, as we're talking about them here, are designed to do is to say, well, let's do that. Let's send some content to people. But instead of just sending the content or having it passively sitting there, let's tie it to a meeting where a leader is going to have a discussion with their team referencing a specific piece of content. So in other words, the leader's not teaching anything. The teaching takes place in the video or the prep material that people would consume. And let's get together and have the leader guide the conversation around how to change, or sorry, why people would want to change. The how is taking place in the prep material created by the facilitator. People get it cerebrally. But ultimately, why happens best and more regularly when we're in conversation with ourselves, with people that we work with on a day-to-day basis. There is, in our experience, no faster, more consistently reliable way for individuals to get to a personal why than through conversation. Conversation with a coach is awesome, but expensive and typically earmarked for more senior people, or conversation with colleagues, which can be largely inexpensive and actually has a higher sort of contextualization rate because we can use shorthand, we can talk about what happened with client A on Tuesday. It becomes very real. And what I found fascinating, Greg, is that we've got almost 9,000 sessions logged in the Actionable platform. So 9,000 workshops or leader-led conversations. Behavior change is actually slightly higher in leader-led conversations than in professionally facilitated sessions.
I think that would probably be surprising to a lot of our listeners and to many practitioners. And I know I'm a little bit surprised, but what you're really doing is you're kind of injecting some learning into the regular cadence or frequency of these meetings. And
well, and the last thing I want to, I just want to mention in there, it's not immediately obvious, I don't think, until you get into it. If we think about most of the meetings that take place in our day-to-day lives with our teams, they're highly tactical, or we're on the receiving end of information, right? It's not overly common that we have most of the meeting dedicated to turning over an idea, sharing perspective, challenging assumptions, identifying where, if this applied, might actually create some gains for us. And so what we hear regularly from participants in those conversations is that it feels different. It feels inspiring, exciting, lighter. They feel more connected to each other. They feel more connected to the company's vision and where they're going. None of which is directly tied to the content. It's just the structure of having a conversation where we are actually giving people the space to find their own sense of meaning in that content.
Yeah, I think what you're sharing there about using those actionable conversations or leader-led conversations is probably going to really make consultants think differently. And so that lends me to want to ask, what's one of the biggest obstacles or stumbling blocks that you see affects consultants and practitioners who are trying to make a big impact, and how does that affect their business?
Lots and lots. I was thinking about this ahead of this call, though. The biggest thing I see from consultants, brand new consultants and highly experienced consultants alike, is an overemphasis on intellectual property, on IP, on the models, on the content, really, of what they're delivering. The people that are just starting out feel this great sense of imposter syndrome because they don't have a large library of IP. Those that are well established protect it fiercely and don't want anyone to see their IP until they get into it. It's not about the content. It's never been about the content, but in the age of AI and ChatGPT, it's now more than ever. What your client is buying is impact. And I think this is important for consultant and buyer alike to realign to the fact that the purpose of this program is to drive change. full stop. If it's not, then let's not call it training. That's a team building experience. And that's fine. There's a time and a place for that. But if we're calling it training, if we're calling it learning, the purpose is to drive change. And so as a consultant, just continuing to hammer that home that, yes, having IP that you can pull from is important. The good news is it's now widely available. You can have a couple conversations with ChatGPT and create a module from a content standpoint. That doesn't differentiate you. If you focus on solving the pain that the client has and knows they have, then you will stand apart because it's still a market full of people trying to pitch the latest, sort of derivative of the five dysfunctions. And it's all been done. Let's leverage the stuff that works well. Sure, put your own spin on it, but realize that the client's buying impact, not content.
You're making a really good point there, Chris, because I often have said to clients in conversations before they're buying our solution, I'll say, look, you look at enough training programs, the bullets are very much the same between the different programs. So it's really what it's going to do for your business. And the other thing, I think that training is often seen as just this expense, but I'm challenging some clients these days to think of that person almost like you would think of a piece of equipment on the floor. And that's not to dehumanize the individual. It's just to say that that person, you might be paying, you know, several tens of thousands of dollars in salary or compensation to over a, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 year timeframe. So when you add all that up, that's almost the equivalent of having a million or $2 million piece of equipment. And you wouldn't just run that thing for 20 years without doing some upgrades every once in a while. So I think really the focus now that we're trying to have with clients is how do you want this to actually impact your business? What is the performance change you want to set? So it's not really the performance of the trainer, it's the performance of the individuals being trained, maybe performance and not performative.
I think I really wanted to build off your last point there, Greg, because there's two thoughts. The sort of bumper sticker that went through my head is performance, not performative. When it comes to the actual work. So thank you for inspiring that. There's a blog post in there, I think. The other piece, though, you mentioned, you know, we want to be aligned with, you know, as important or as indispensable as a piece of automation equipment purchased at the shop. And I think it's a great comparison because when you've got a business leader that goes, oh, I read this book, can we get some training on it? That's kind of like, I was at this trade show and I saw this awesome piece of technology. We should buy it. It's like, well, okay, but does it actually improve our current processes? Does it help us to, you know, produce it cheaper or faster? Or is it just a shiny thing that's got 10% overlap with what we do and is largely a waste of money, but looks nice? Yeah. And I think there's a really strong parallel there to how a lot of training is purchased, right? So yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris, so much for being our guest on the Accelerating Operational Performance podcast. Again, if you want to reach out to Chris Taylor and his team at Actionable, you can do that at actionable.co, not .com, but .co. And they'd love to have a conversation with you, especially if you're a consultant or practitioner who's looking at increasing the impact that you have on your clients. And so that brings our episode of the Accelerating Operational Performance podcast to a close. So again, we wish you all the success in making changes to your leadership approach so that you can have more success on your personal journey.